The Gold Nugget by Tony Dean. The smell of fresh paint still permeated the room as Mark Simmons got ready for bed in his new, quite unfurnished home just outside of Nevada City. Mark was mid-30, medium build, tall enough, and had short, dark hair. He stayed active by walking with his dog and going to the gym. He spent the day running last-minute errands before closing and getting the keys to his first house purchase. He managed to run to the Quick and Cheap to grab a bite to eat and to get some things for breakfast. He brought in the suitcase he was living out of for the past few days, his sleeping bag, and a pad to sleep on, but no pillow. There were some items in the cupboards and in the pantry, but not all that much to mention. Nevada City got its start as a gold mining town with the insurgence of the 49ers during the California Gold Rush. It is set in the Sierras with ponderosa pines and spruces interspersed. It survived most of the 1900s as a living ghost town, and now booms as a tourist attraction and a center for high-cultured artisans. This was Mark's new home. It was a far cry from the hustle and bustle of the Valley, just north of Los Angeles, where he grew up, went to school, and worked for the Municipal Water District. Lying in bed, Mark enjoyed listening to the sounds of rustling pine trees outside his window. He imagined the trees swaying as the sound would come and go with the ebb and flow of the wind. It was much more soothing, he thought, than the drone of cars on the freeway, or the squealing of tires and the occasional purring of a jake brake, and the other myriad of sounds he'd grown up listening to through an open window. The volume of the sound coming into his room dissipated to silence as sleep overtook him. Mark was startled awake by the loud sound of breaking twigs and crackling understory, and there, standing over his sleeping bag-covered feet, was a grubby miner pulling a heavily laden mule through a grove of trees. Mark blinked hard several times, shook his head, and then pulled his feet in as the mule slowly stepped over him. As cloud cover darkened the moonlight that filled the room, the apparition vanished. Mark blinked hard again, then wasn't sure what he saw, but he wasn't all too sure if he was actually awake either. Nonetheless, he scrunched up his fleece jacket pillow, closed his eyes for what seemed only a moment, and the next thing he knew, sunlight was beginning to fill the room. The next morning, Mark headed outside onto his porch to have some cereal, orange juice, and take in the start of a new day. The air was fresh, crisp, and filled with the scent of pine. His deck was only a few feet off the ground, small but functional. His yard butted right up against Forest Service land. He could see some deer in the meadow off in the distance and was excited to see his first spotted fawn. He thought about what he saw last night. He couldn't help but think of a scene from the Twilight Zone where an unnamed man walks through a town alone and finds himself in a soda shop discussing his plight with himself in a mirror. "You remember Scrooge, old buddy?" he asks his reflection. "It's what he said to that ghost, Jacob Marley. He said, 'You may be an undigested bit of beef, a crumb of cheese, a blot of mustard, a fragment of an undone potato, but there's more of gravy than of grave about you.' 'You must be, but now I've had it. I'd like to wake up now.'" Mark felt the same way. It was that lousy microwave burrito from the gas station last night. Just a bit of indigestion, not a ghost. Mark thumped on his sternum and made like he was going to burp. After eating, he sat out on a game trail he saw while leaning over the deck railing. It was well worn, and the opening into his yard was amassed with deer droppings. The trail made its way through the short forest to a meadow, then across mid-thigh-high grass for several hundred yards into another wooded area. The trail climbed a bit more before reaching a small plateau in a grove of trees. Mark then came across an area devoid of forest debris where a ring of large rocks lay. Within it was another circle of rocks that were darkened and charred. There were also beer cans and wrappers strewn all around. Mark had come across a little hangout spot. He sat on one of the larger rocks and wondered what kids would talk about while a fire burned, they drank cheap beer, and listened to some music on a portable boombox. With the intention of coming up later to dispose of them, he gathered up the cans and collected up all the trash into the smaller ring, then headed back to his house. For the next few days, life was buzzing. The moving truck would be delivering his furniture, and his parents would be bringing Charlie, his 5-year-old Aussie Shepherd Border Collie mix. He was settling into his new job at the water treatment plant. Things were good, and he almost forgot all about the grubby old miner. But every so often he would pass some sort of business that used the 49er to attract tourism, causing Mark to stop and recall his dream. He questioned if it wasn't a ghost he saw that night, but always convinced himself it was only a dream. He started his days now with a walk on his little deer trail with Charlie, usually going a bit further each time, until he worked up a nice little routine to get Charlie and himself some exercise. He bought a new bicycle, had it set up with racks and bags, and enjoyed being able to ride his bicycle to work and make an occasional run into town for groceries or what have you. The All-Star game had gone into extra innings, and Mark found himself asleep on the couch. He reached over to turn off the infomercial and saw something odd in the reflection of the crackling black screen. He turned to look over the back of the couch, and there was his miner friend near the dining room table. The miner stood there, looking over his shoulder and around at the trees that were amongst his settings. He petted the nose of the mule, cupped his hand over its long twitching ear, and asked it to keep an ear out. Mark sat up, watched him as he paced off some trees, and seemed to scribble some notes on a piece of leather. The neighbor's motion light came on, and Mark looked toward the window for a brief moment. But when he turned back, the miner was gone. He again put it off as a dream, probably from sleeping in a different place like his first night in the house. The next morning he got up as usual and went for his walk, the number 27 floating around in his head for some reason. On weekends, Mark picked up his trail book, strapped a pack onto Charlie, grabbed his day pack, and headed out into the nearby history-filled mountains. There were tons of trails in the area, and Mark compared the notes in his book with information from co-workers or other locals to see which ones were really worth doing. Halfway through his book, Mark started to notice how similar a lot of the trails were, how familiar he was with his own little trail, but how easily other trails in the vicinity looked very much like his own, and so much like each other, either because of a resembling meadow or some way the trail meandered through the trees. It was a wonder he never got lost, he thought to himself. He really started to notice how certain parts of his trail really brought on a strange sense of deja vu. It was strange how little trail out his back door seemed so different each time, yet so familiar. He scoured through his notes about the different trails and concluded that his trail looked something like the Twin Thieves Trail. It was 15 miles south and was the site of an impromptu trial and hanging of two brothers convicted by some miners of jumping a claim in 1851. Although Charlie and he hadn't been there in a while and had only walked it once, his notes about the trail said it looked a lot like the fire pit. Mark was exhausted from the revelry of his company picnic. The sun was barely setting on this mid-August day as he laid down in full dress on top of the covers and closed his eyes. It was a loud thumping sound that woke him. Mark looked up to see the miner take several swings with his pickaxe into the ground at the foot of his bed. He watched as the miner grabbed a short spade from the mule and began clearing some of the felled trees and debris where he'd been swinging the axe. Mark slowly turned his body toward the edge of the bed and got up and walked toward his guest. He could feel the needles, twigs, and understory at his feet. He was standing next to the miner when the mule snorted, startling both of them. As they both turned to look at the mule, Mark saw nothing but his dresser and wardrobe. Mark knew he couldn't have been dreaming. It was all too real. The noises, the smell of the pine, but the window was open. The smell of wet soil. Charlie had been digging in the yard again. It was all too easy to explain away. It was a dream. There couldn't be a ghost. He convinced himself that he had read too many stories about ghost towns and mining camps, and that what he saw was his imagination running aimlessly through all those memories. He thought about lucid dreaming. Maybe that was it. He was making it up, controlling where the dream was going. That made more sense than it being a ghost. Well, at least it was more settling. He thought about it and decided to look into lucid dreaming at the library.
Interesting minor characters. The hillsides here have hundreds of stories, son, the library assistant told him. He was an old school bus driver, retired now, and sorted books 2 days a week.
Mr. Holden was squatty. What hair he had left was more salt than pepper, and he had a stern voice, probably from setting kids down on buses all those years.
Son, I could tell you stories till your ears bled. There's old Mulehead Jackson, Patsy Maybell, who dressed like a man and swore better than any foul-mouthed fool I know. There are also gunslingers, no Wild Bills or Doc Holidays, but we had our share of crooked card players, charlatans, and two-bit madams. Any in particular you're interested in, kid?
Not sure. How about the grubby miner type? Mark thumbed through a book on the table. Well, why don't you start there?
Okay, let's start there.
Mr. Holden turned and walked toward the history section. He went on to describe about a half a dozen grubby old miners that panned for gold, dug for gold, and a few crazy ones that danced in the moonlight barefoot. But none of them really sounded like the intriguing man that was at the foot of his bed digging a hole, only confirming to Mark that his visitor was only a dream. And heck, it was more interesting and a lot easier than reading all that psychobabble about dreams.
Bam!
The crash of dishes woke Mark up. He was startled by the clattering sound of a metal object hitting the ground. At first, Mark thought it was one from his dish rack. Then he looked up, and there was his grubby guest once again at the foot of his bed. The miner was picking up whatever it was he had dropped. Mark saw it was a gold pan and that the miner was setting it inside another that was already on the ground. Mark again got up and walked around the room, taking in the trees, the earthen smell of the freshly dug hole, and the worn odor of an unwashed miner. He looked for markings but couldn't make any out. Mark petted the stiff hairs of the mule that nuzzled his hand as he pressed down on the top of its head. The miner reached into a leather bag on the side of his mule and pulled out a brown and worn rag. He crouched on one knee as he slowly unrolled it. Mark was eager to get a glimpse, but couldn't as the miner suspiciously crowded over it, concealing the object. He re-rolled the object into the rag, placed it into the gold pan, took the bottom pan, and placed it on top of the other. With some twine, he bundled the two together and leaned over and placed the object neatly into the hole. Mark was reading the words stamped on the pan when a drop of water hit it. He realized that the miner was crying. He tried to look into his eyes as the miner began to rub the tears from his face. He slowly evaporated from Mark's sight. By far, this was the most time he had spent with his odd friend, and the closest any of his dreams were to each other, and what he read on the pan was equally disturbing. He had to go back and look further, deeper. There had to be more to it. He went back to the library only to find that Mr. Holden wasn't there. He asked around for someone else, and then the head librarian suggested going up to the cemetery and asking the caretaker. His family, the Hermans, have roots in the community from the first days of the gold rush. His great-grand-something set up a mining camp and a general store in the days following the Sutter Mill discovery, she told him. In his 70s, Robert Herman lives above the old Burnham Bar, where the Herman General Store stood over 150 years ago. Mark knocked on the door at the top of the narrow flight of stairs, four stern raps, and he heard the creak of floorboards and the metallic squeal of the door handle turning. "Can I help you?" came the deep voice of the man in the doorway. Robert stood just over 6 feet, looked good for his age, and had a comforting way about himself, and spoke deliberately. "A good-looking grandfather," Mark thought to himself. "I hope you can," Mark replied. Robert asked Mark in. He fetched him a soda and listened as his visitor explained what it was he was looking for. Mark made up a story about seeing a picture of his grubby mold miner at an office somewhere. Robert seemed curious and let Mark continue with some details that seemed more involved than just 1,000 words a picture could tell. While intently listening, Robert spoke up. "The murder of Gold Dust Willie." Mark looked at him. "What was that you said?" "You're a mystery man. Sounds like William Evans. The locals called him Gold Dust Willie. He claims to have found a nugget the size of a pine cone. No one believed him, so they said he had spent too much time sniffing gold dust."
"Well, is it true? Did he have a nugget?"
"No one knows, son. Old Willie was killed quite brutally. But I stand corrected. The only person to know the truth are Willie and the vermin who killed him."
Mark didn't want to ask, but it got the better of him. "How was he killed?"
"Where did you say you lived?"
"I bought the Miller place out on Dickinson."
"Oh, out by Willow Hollow. Didn't they just remodel it?"
Yeah, it's out by Willow Hollow, and they really just touched it up," replied Mark before eagerly asking, "Why do you want to know where I live?"
"He was killed not too far from you, just up the hillside there. The side of his head was cleaved in by his own pickaxe." Robert grimaced as if receiving the blow himself. "No one really knows if he had the nugget or not. They never found the person killed him, nor the nugget on his person or on his mule."
"Well, what happened to the mule?"
"Actually, funny you asked. My great-granddad took it. He kept it and rented it out from time to time."
"Maggie," Mark whispered.
"What was that? How did you know the name of that mule?"
Frantically, Mark thought of any number of reasons he knew Maggie's name. "Oh, it was written on the back of one of the photos."
"So the name of the mule was on this photo, but not Willie's."
"Son, I was born at night, but not..." "I've seen him in my house, walking with her." Mark turned and tilted his head away from Mark, looking around and talking to her.
Robert raised an ungroomed eyebrow. "What else is he doing?"
"Please, Mr. Herman, you can't tell anyone. I don't want any stories going on around about this. I don't need people around here thinking I'm some sort of crazy city boy."
"Son, you're not the first, nor do I believe will you ever be the last person to see Willie." He tried to comfort Mark. "He makes his rounds. And besides, The whole town already knows you're a crazy city boy. Excited by knowing the name of his sporadic visiting guest, Mark went home by way of the hardware store, picked up a rake, shovel, and a pickaxe. The total for the three items after the sale price reduction came to $27 even. Mark really didn't know what he was going to do, but he thought, what could it hurt? Robert said it was near his place where old Willie was killed, and at times he could swear the game trail took him right past the grove of trees he saw Willie and Maggie in. And besides, the tools would come in handy when he started to work on his raised flower beds. Mark spent his days at the water treatment plant installing new systems and software and instructing the staff on the upgrades he was hired to oversee. The job required a lot of attention, but at times he would spend several minutes staring at a gauge or some other instrument that didn't change much. Usually his mind wandered through that grove of trees as he thought about old Willie. Co-workers noticed, but most thought not to ask what was on his mind. The few that did got stock replies about how he had stayed up too late, finishing up some painting or other fixer-up type chore. The start of baseball playoffs was another good excuse. Mark didn't sleep well most nights. He often drifted in and out of sleep, hoping to catch one more glimpse of Willie, the dug hole, and of course what was in that worn, brown rag. He kept going over everything he could remember about Willie, Maggie, and the location of the trees, but couldn't get that awful feeling about Willie's death out of his mind. He was running at full stride up the game trail, chasing after Charlie, who was barking and seemed to be running after something. He called after her, but to no avail. She just ignored him. He came to the fire pit, and Charlie was on the other side, near some trees. Not barking, not doing anything. She just sat there, staring into the woods. Mark could see his breath as he tried to catch it. As he leaned over to ask Charlie what was up, he could see what she was staring at. The silhouettes of two men were hard to make out in the moonlight, and the shadows cast by the overstory played tricks on his eyes. Mark shivered a bit in the cool, crisp air as he made his way, walking softly and hiding behind trees, toward the two men. Slowly, Charlie got up and went back down the trail. Mark did not notice. Moonlight trickled through the pines, as did the shadows of the men and their voices. As he got closer to them, he could make out more. They were young and nearly identical in appearance. They were rugged, wearing long coats, cowboy hats, and holsters with guns. Right out of a movie, Mark thought to himself. They were talking about robbing someone, their seriousness interrupted by drunken laughter and slaps on the back. It haunted Mark. But whom do they want to rob? Mark rubbed his hands together, curled them around each other, and blew into them. As he watched their breaths, something caught his attention. It was Maggie snorting. This is why the woods seemed so familiar. It was here where he first saw the two of them. He could smell it, the moist, freshly upturned earth. He was gasping for breath. Could this be? It can't be, he thought to himself. He yelled at the two men. They seemed to turn toward him, but then their gazes focused back up the slope ahead of them.
How about it, Willie? One of them spoke, bringing the bottle to his lips. Yeah, Willie. What's that nugget you're always talking about? He thrust the shovel into the ground and leaned on its handle. You know, we're pretty darn tired of you talking about it. It's about time you showed it to us, said the one with the bottle as he took a swig of the vile liquid it had inside. Come on, Willie, the other beckoned him with the shovel. Tell us. We won't tell no one.
Mark could do nothing but watch. He turned to see that Willie had carved his initials into the tree. W.E. Willie tried to use humor to bide some time.
Boys, it's just some dumb tale I tell. I ain't got no nug. Now go on. Go on back to town and leave an old man be. Thing is, Willie, we knows about the nugget. We knows you got it. Now where is it?
The one said as he hoisted the shovel over his shoulder.
I don't have no nug. Go on, boys. Come on. Let me be.
Willie's desperation came through in his voice.
If it's money you want, I don't got much, but you can have it.
Willie fumbled with his shirt pocket, took out some bills, and waved it at them.
Go on. Go on back to town. Have a drink on me. Believe me, be. Much obliged, Willie.
He reached out and took the money, keeping the bottle at his side.
You won't mind us looking around on Nellie, will ya?
Before Willie could reply, the shovel smacked him on the side of his head. Mark could hear the deep and hard reptilian breaths that Willie made as he laid there unconscious. His face in the pine needles of his freshly covered buried treasure. After rifling through Willie's clothing, the men strew Maggie's belongings all over the opening. No nugget. When they were done searching her, they smacked her hindquarters, scaring her off. They angrily turned toward the listless body of Willie.
We're tired of you, old man.
He took one last gulp from the bottle before trading it in for Willie's pickaxe. Mark couldn't watch. The sound nearly sickened him. Tears covered his face as he woke from his dream in a cold sweat. Charlie was at his side, wagging her tail. Mark went to his truck, picked up his tools, and made his way back up the game trail. The smell of moist earth filled his nostrils as the shovel scraped the metal object. He tapped at it, then dropped to his knees. He reached into the hole, which was as deep as it was in his bedroom. He used his hands to clear the remaining dirt, and there it was, a 12-inch circular piece of metal engraved with Herman General Store, Nevada Camp. As he stood above the hole and surveyed around the clearing, the emotions of the events of last night overwhelmed him. When he opened his eyes, he could see the rust circles from Willie's tears next to a few wet drops of his own. Once back at his house, where an excited Charlie greeted him, Mark laid out some newspapers. He placed the pans on it, took a deep breath, and cut the twine with his pocket knife. He lifted the pan, and there was the brown rag. Mark's heart raced as he slowly unraveled it and revealed Goldust Willie's final secret. Mark laid the pans into the hole, took his time covering it back up, scattering needles, understory, and cones to minimize any look of disturbance. It was far removed from the fire pit, and he hoped would remain undisturbed for another 150 years, if not longer. He patted Charlie on her side. "How does that look, girl?" He walked the 27 paces over to a tree and took out his pocket knife. As he began to carve his initials under the WE, he turned his head to look over his shoulder, and there was Willie pulling Maggie along. Willie stopped at the edge of the opening, stroked Maggie's mane, looked at Mark, and tipped his hat. As he turned and led Maggie into the trees, he vanished for the last time. That was The Gold Nugget by Tony Dean.